Hey everyone, long time no talk. Sorry for not being here for a while, but I did give you guys a warning. I'm back home now after a good visit to my family, and my brother got married, which was great. So I guess we're getting back to science. Like I mentioned last episode, this is going to be part two of the CRISPR-Cas9 discussion. And for this episode, I've picked out three different articles, all using the CRISPR-Cas9 system with a little bit differing applications. So the first article I'm going to talk about is called Muscle-Specific CRISPR-Cas9 Dystrophin Gene Editing Ameliorates Pathophysiology in a Mouse Model for Duchenne Muscular Dystrophy. This work is by Bengtsson and colleagues and was published in Nature Communications in 2017. So for those who don't know, Duchenne's muscular dystrophy is a severe type of muscular dystrophy, which is a group of diseases that results in increasing weakening and breakdown of muscles. It affects approximately 1 in 5,000 newborn males. And the muscle weakness begins at age 4 generally, and it worsens quite quickly, disabling the upper legs and pelvis so that these individuals have trouble standing, and most can't walk by the age of 12. Duchenne's muscular dystrophy is caused by defects in the dystrophin gene. Now, dystrophin is a rod-shaped protein that's part of a complex that connects the cytoskeleton of the muscle fiber to the surrounding extracellular matrix through the cell membrane. So a deficiency in this dystrophin causes membrane fragility and progressive muscle wasting. So what Bengtsson and colleagues did with the CRISPR-Cas9 system was try to correct this defect in the dystrophin gene that causes Duchenne muscular dystrophy. To do this, they used a mouse model. So these are mice that have been specifically bred to exhibit the characteristics of Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. And specifically, this means that they have an error in their gene for dystrophin, which is also called the MDX4CV gene. So they created a CRISPR-Cas9 system with the corrected version of this gene and used it to test if they could correct the defect. They did this a couple different ways. First, they used just the muscle tissue. So they did a targeted injection or an intramuscular injection to see if their CRISPR-Cas9 would work on muscle. And what they saw was up to 70% of the muscle area that they targeted was able to express dystrophin after treatment with the CRISPR-Cas9. The second thing they tested was systemic administration. So they injected the CRISPR-Cas9 into the retroorbital vein, so right into the bloodstream. And this was an attempt to have it spread throughout the body. And they saw widespread expression of dystrophin in both skeletal and cardiac muscles. So this worked. At least in a mouse model, they were able to correct the defect in the dystrophin gene and lessen the muscle wasting and muscle weakness in these mice. The second article that I pulled out is called Inactivation of Porcine Endogenous Retrovirus in Pigs Using CRISPR-Cas9. And this was work performed by New and colleagues and was published in Science in 2017. So the idea behind this is that they are looking towards creating a pig for use in xenotransplantation, and that is the transplantation of porcine organs into humans, which is something that we do need to be thinking about because there is a shortage of organs for human transplantation. And as pigs are quite similar to us, they would be a valuable resource to be able to utilize for this purpose. So currently, there is the risk of cross-species transmission of porcine endogenous retrovirus, and this is what's been, or one of the things that's been impeding our progress and the clinical application of this xenotransplantation. So porcine endogenous retrovirus, which is short formed to PERVS, and don't get me wrong, I don't miss the humor in that, and yes, I'm going to be saying PERVS a lot, and I'm not going to laugh once. So endogenous retroviruses are viral elements that have been integrated into the genome of the individual, and then they're passed down to their offspring. And this isn't specific to pigs. We as humans have endogenous retrovirus portions in our own DNA. The risk is that while we have been able to adapt to them and tolerate them and have them within our genome, the porcine ones are foreign to us and may cause infection or negative effects on us. Now, in our genomes, and I assume in other mammals' genomes, the endogenous retroviruses do serve a role. They have been linked to gene expression and regulation. So the previous work done by New and colleagues looked at a pig cell line. So they did cell culture in a petri dish and introduced the CRISPR-Cas9 system with a template to deactivate the PERV gene. And they saw that this worked very well. Once the cells were treated, they no longer expressed these endogenous retroviral genes. They also showed that in a human cell line infected with PERVs, the infection does take. So the human cells are affected by PERVs. And additionally, they observed horizontal transfer of PERVs among human cells, meaning that the DNA was transferred on from cell to cell. So the next step that New et al. Took was to use a porcine primary cell line. So again, cell culture. They used the CRISPR-Cas9 system and inactivated all PERVs in this cell line. And from it, they generated PERV inactivated pigs using somatic cell nuclear transfer. What this means is that they took the nucleus with the desired genes, so the PERV inactivated nucleus, and transplanted it into a denucleated egg cell. So an egg cell that it had its own nucleus and therefore genetic material removed. They inserted the nucleus from the somatic cell with the PERV inactivated genes and then cultured them until the blastocyst stage. So it resembled a structure of approximately what you would see at 5 to 9 days of development. It kind of looks like a berry, just a bunch of cells together. They took this structure and implanted it into a surrogate sow and had her carry the pregnancy to term. The offspring resulting from this pregnancy were PERV inactivated, so the editing done by the CRISPR-Cas9 system before the implantation was successful. So this could mean big things for xenotransplantation and or the use of pigs' organs for human transplant. If we can develop pigs that are more compatible and easy to use, then we could have something big on our hands. The final paper I'm going to talk about today is called The Development of Broad Virus Resistance in Non-Transgenic Cucumber Using CRISPR-Cas9 Technology. This work was done by Chandrasekaran and colleagues and was published in 2016 in Molecular Plant Pathology. I think this is the first time I've really talked about crops because they're really not my expertise, but here we go. So in crop production, plant viruses have the potential to cause extensive reductions in crop yields. And there are a couple of pathways that can be taken to improve viral resistance in plants. One of them is to do some breeding with a crop-resistant plant that's related to your plant of interest. And then another pathway is through genome editing. So the plant viruses of interest in this paper are RNA viruses, and they require host factors to maintain their life cycle. And in cucumbers, these host factors are a part of the EIF4F complex, which is a complex of EIF4E and EIF iso4E proteins. I'm not going to go into any more detail about those proteins or about those genes. We're just going to know that they exist in cucumbers and they are required for these RNA viral infections. So cucumbers have one of each gene. It is possible for other plants to have more copies, but cucumbers have one, and it is a recessive trait, meaning that they require two recessive alleles in order for the expression. So what Chandrasekaran and colleagues did was use the CRISPR-Cas9 system to create small deletions and single nucleotide polymorphisms in the E1F4E gene. Effectively, they wanted to deactivate this gene so that the complex of proteins was not formed. That is, the complex that acts as the host factor to maintain the life cycle of these plant viruses. Now, as I said, it is a recessive trait, so they require two recessive copies. So what they did was take the heterozygous mutants that they created using their CRISPR-Cas9 system and bred them together to generate homologous recessive plants. In other words, plants with two copies of this recessive trait. So two copies of the altered defective EIF4F gene. They found that these homozygous recessive plants exhibited immunity to cucumber vein yellowing virus infection and also resistance to zucchini yellow mosaic virus and papaya ring spot mosaic virus. Now, I don't know a lot about these viruses. I'm just assuming that they are severely detrimental to the cucumber crop and would affect the amount of good saleable cucumbers you would produce in the yield. So they showed that this could be a legitimate strategy in plants and in crop science to avoid viral infections and improve crop yield. So those are the three articles I wanted to go over today. I will note that this technology is still relatively new. So while I was looking for articles, there's a lot out there that's proof of concept. So saying, yes, we can use this CRISPR-Cas9 system in this organism and it does work. And there is not so much work out yet that is targeting a specific gene or looking to fix a specific problem. I expect that these will come probably in buckets within the next 5 years. I know it's quite a process to go from experimental idea through actual experimentation, through writing, reviewing, and then finally to have your work published. So I would expect we'll get a flood of those in the coming years and see more widespread use of this CRISPR-Cas9 system and hopefully some applications that follow through into industry and affect how we're producing animals, producing crops, and then also into the human system and helping us treat and prevent diseases, etc. So I'm going to cut this episode here. I hope you guys enjoyed part two of the CRISPR discussion. In the next episode, I think I'm going to cover kind of a super recent topic with the passing of the new NAFTA agreement between the US, Canada, and Mexico. I know there's been a lot of concern in Canada with what's happening in the dairy sector, and specifically the Canadian dairy market being open to a larger portion of American products. And there are differences between the US and Canada and how they regulate hormones specifically that they're allowed to use in their dairy production. And I know there are concerns in Canada with these American products being sold that don't necessarily meet Canadian standards. So I'm going to try and tackle that next week. It might get a little bit more opinion-based, but hopefully I can keep it pretty scientific So yeah, if that interests you a bit, check out next episode. As always, I've included links to the three papers that I've discussed on the blog, which is wordsaboutbiology.wordpress.com. You can also reach me on Instagram or on Twitter. On Instagram, it's wordsaboutbiology, and on Twitter, it's wordsaboutbio. With that, I'll sign off for this week. I encourage you to stay inquisitive and interested in science, and I'll see you guys next episode.